secret location in room 100 of 540 Jack Gibbs Boulevard, this is Craft. I'm your host, Doug Dangler.
Columbus native Hanif Abdurraqib is a MacArthur Foundation Genius Grantee. His book, A Little Devil in America, was the winner of the Carnegie Medal and the Gordon Burns Prize, and a finalist for the National Book Award. His first collection of essays, They Can't Kill Us Until They Kill Us, was named a Book of the Year by NPR, Esquire, BuzzFeed, O, The Oprah Magazine, Pitchfork, and Chicago Tribune, among others. Go Ahead in the Rain, Notes to a Tribe Called Quest, was a New York Times bestseller and a National Book Critics Circle Award and Kirkus Prize finalist, and was longlisted for the National Book Award. His second book of poems, A Fortune for Your Disaster, won the Lenore Marshall Prize. His latest book, There's Always This Year on Basketball and Ascension, released on March 26th, 2024. Welcome to Craft, Hanif Abdurraqib.
Doug, thanks so much for having me again. It's a real joy to talk to you.
It's wonderful to talk to you. And it is tough to do a concise introduction of you because you've earned so many awards. So when you reflect on your success, what does it do to your sense of being a writer who has to write again tomorrow, always the writer's dilemma, to face the page another day? How do you get those things to work together?
I tend to not think about success in terms of decoration. For me, I think about success in terms of, am I able to re-enliven my curiosity every time I sit down? Or there's a thing for me where every time I finish a poem or even a part of a book, I tell myself, I can't believe I did that, and I can't believe I get to do it again. Of course, the latter part of that is not guaranteed. And so success for me, I kind of have to separate myself from this idea of decoration as a metric of success, because I think that would lead to a kind of satisfaction that would most likely for me numb my curiosity and my excitement, my ability to feel excited. And so I'm thankful for these things, of course, but I'm really beholden to my curiosity and my ability to keep returning to it and enlivening it every time I sit down.
Mm-hmm. You said, I can't believe I get to do it again. And that's fascinating, because so many authors that I've spoken to have said something along the lines of, I'm always happy to have written, and then I have to face it again the next day. And I think that's a tremendously great attitude there, that I get to do it again. That's a job that so many people don't get to have, right? The kind of view towards that. Yeah. So
yeah, I don't want to suffer for it. I want to feel excited about it. It is a job, and it does get challenging, as all jobs can, but it is also a point of pleasure and a point of, you know, again, I'm extracting obsessions and curiosities and things that are meaningful to me, and I get to put it into language that will hopefully crystallize those curiosities and obsessions and therefore make them last a bit longer.
Mm-hmm. And your latest book, There's Always This Year on Basketball and Ascension, is a perfect example of that, because it seems clear that you've been a basketball fan for a very, very long time. And this must have been a wonderful experience to sit down and reflect on all of these different parts of your life that are brought together through basketball and to write about all of that. But it's also very different, I should say, from some of your other stuff. You've done a lot of essays, but a lot of poetry. And the poetry was where I first became familiar with some of your work. And how did this writing this book differ from those earlier works, from the poetry, from some of the more essay-driven stuff?
Well, one, it's a much more experimental book in terms of just straight-up shape and scope. But it also kind of differentiated. It was a bit more exciting. You know, it was this thing that for me felt like, in some ways, very much being written by me, obviously. But it felt like it was kind of, I had dreamed this book for so long. I'd wanted to write this book for so long. And this really felt to me as though it was kind of written in this pursuit of dreaming, which meant that, yes, I was writing the language, but it also felt like some of the language is just being written for me in this pursuit of, I have dreamed this and it is uniquely mine. And so it was a lot. No book is easy. I don't want to overstate the ease of it, but it was a smoother process. It was a more, things were revealed to me as I went, instead of kind of feeling like I had to fight my way through, which I sometimes have had to do before. This was a really low stakes book when it came to fighting. There was a level of ease that I'd never experienced.
It's interesting because you talk a lot about things that would seem sort of difficult for folks to talk about, things that you've certainly thought a lot about, the death of your mom, how you related to your dad, and things like that. So I'm sort of surprised that it was easier, because it does seem so personal in many ways. You talk about how your dad eats and how he gesticulates when he talks, things that you recognize in yourself. And in some ways, it's so personal that I can see it being easy to write about. But on the other hand, it's also introduces this kind of vulnerability that might be really uncomfortable at times.
Sure, sure. Yeah, but my approach to that is also kind of steeped in gratitude, you know, to enliven these relationships, particularly with my father, who I had not written about in that way before, but to take that away from any real life complications and to really just affix it to gratitude for these feelings that I have of being witness to someone I love doing something that I think many people would consider mundane, but something that meant a lot to me. These kind of things, you want to be able to articulate them well in meaningful ways. And yeah, sure. Can that get a little bit hard? Sure. I think that's part of it. But the reward of that is a kind of clarity that you get that the work affords you, and that kind of clarity that you can take into perhaps loving someone better than you did before.
Mm-hmm. And I was curious about that because you reflect a lot on your father and writing about him. Did reflecting on him alter your feelings about him? Or another way of asking that is, did you have a different understanding of him through writing about him?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. Well, one thing is, as you get older, I think you, at least for me, as I get older, you have a different appreciation of your parents. I think they kind of crystallize for you as you reach the ages that they were. My father, to me, when I was young, was just a parent with all the trappings of parenthood. And that, for me, was complicated because I was not a particularly good child. You know, I was a child who was often in trouble, who was often placing a burden on my father and family. I think as I've gotten older, I've really maintained a level of grace for not just my father, but the people in my life who endured me as a child and as a young adult, not just child, as a young adult person.
Yeah.
There's a level of grace that I return to. Yeah.
Yeah. I like that, the endured me as a child, because I feel like there's people that would look back on their childhood and say, well, I was really good as a kid, or this or that, or people would endure me as a child. I think I'm more in your camp, that I was probably more endured as a child and possibly as an adult. So yeah, I like that description.
Yeah.
So one of the other things that you write about is obviously your love of basketball and coming to understand the game and all of that. And you said this was an easier book to write, but when did you first consider writing There's Always This Year? Because you had said it was something you had thought about for a long time and you had maybe delayed starting.
Yeah, I wanted to write this book in 2018, but I didn't know how. There's one thing that I appreciate perhaps about myself sometimes. There's a level of self-awareness of understanding what I'm capable of and what might not serve me if I started out down that road when I most eagerly dreamed it up. And so, yeah, I dreamed up this book in 2018, but I also didn't know how to talk about it. If a publisher said, well, sell me on your next book, I wouldn't know how to do that. And knowing that I would not know how to do that, and knowing that I would not even know how to talk about it, was a real signal to me that I wasn't ready to write it. And I think in some ways I had to really teach myself how to write this book through the writing of all the other books that came in between They Can't Kill Us Until They Kill Us and this one, which meant that the tone of the book and finding the kind of bravery that wherein formal experimentation can flourish, these kind of things needed to come to me, because this book wouldn't exist without it. And that takes a real level of honesty, because in 2018, I could have said, I want to write this book, and so I'm going to sit out and write this book. And it just wouldn't have been the book that it is, which I think right now is a much better book than it would have been then. And so there's a level of patience that requires, and that's hard. Patience is hard for anyone, but I think especially for writers who just kind of want to see, so many times we want to see what we're made of, but sometimes you need to write several other things to get to the thing that is really hovering over you.
Yeah. And one of the things that would have changed it is a really affecting part of the book where you talk about being in 2020 as the basketball hoops are starting to come down and driving around looking for something. And, you know, there was that whole sense of alienation during that time, but it had never occurred to me, because I'm terrible at basketball, that all that stuff had happened. I wasn't even aware of it, that they had taken the basketball posts down and all of that stuff. It was a very fascinating passage to read about someone looking for a piece of their identity in the city and just not finding it anymore.
And I will say that that moment unlocked the book for me in a big way. So you're right in that I needed to not only write myself towards this book, but I actually needed to live myself towards an ability to write the book. Because in 2020, that moment of driving around and looking for basketball rims that were still affixed to the backboards, that unlocked a real part of this book for me in terms of time, immortality, and really seeking a place where you feel reflected in a city that is rapidly taking away those mirrors. And so, yeah, I really needed to live my way into the ability to write this book as well. And thankfully, I did not chase after this book before I was ready.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You're a graduate of Beechcroft High School in mm-hmm. Columbus. And obviously, this book has a lot of Columbus involved in it. What kind of reactions have you gotten from, say, other writers who read the book about Columbus? And does it change their thinking about that? Does it make them say, oh, Columbus sounds maybe better than I thought it was, or it sounds worse than I thought it was? And what kind of feedback do you get from other people, other writers?
Well, you know, Doug, it's interesting because I think sometimes my thing I try to do is to write the city in a way that feels like it could be any city. You know, I want to write Columbus and make it feel like it could be the city where you are, the city where you have been. And so I think what I usually get from other writers is this sense of, I didn't know it was like that, or the way you've rendered this feels to me like it is something familiar. Mm-hmm. That's maybe the highest compliment, because that's kind of what I'm attempting to ask myself, these questions of how can I make this place feel familiar to you, even if you've never seen it? And so I do get that sometimes. I do get people who, writers and other readers, who kind of make trips here. You know, I don't know if it's solely due to my writing, to be clear, but I try to write this city honestly, and also try to write my little favorite corners of it that are, I write about the United Dairy Farmers I love, and hopefully people who visit here stop at a United Dairy Farmers and experience that, for me, what is a one-of-a-kind unique experience. These kind of things, you know, like I want to write the city honestly, but I also want to write it from a real place of affection, critical affection, but affection nonetheless.
I've tried to do that with folks when they're visiting here, and a friend of mine from Germany I took to White Castle, and did not have the reaction that I might have hoped.
Did you lead up with anything? Well, you went straight to White Castle. I feel like you got to build up to White Castle.
He was here for a couple of days, and I said, you know what started in this city? White Castle, and I think Wendy's. And he'd been to Wendy's. His reaction to White Castle did not make me think that he would ever bring his family back for White Castle, say. But, you know, such is life.
Such is life, indeed.
Hanif Adurakib, I want to thank you very much for not only your writing, but being a great representation of and promoter of Columbus, and really putting us on the national stage with your excellence in writing. So thank you very much.
It's always great to talk to you. I appreciate you.
For more information from my guests, visit www.craftheshow.com. This is Doug Dangler. Until next time, be creative.
Hello, Columbus, Ohio. This is Dr. Vince Clarino, host of the City League Sports Show, the show where we talk about the past, the present, and future of Columbus City Schools athletics. We're talking weekly on the show about basketball, football, soccer, track and field. You name it, we're talking about it with coaches, players, current and former. Catch us on Saturdays at 8 a.m. on WCBE 90.5 FM.
Kenny Wayne Shepherd has spent 30 years making music, and he takes nothing for granted.
In the beginning, it was just a magical thing that I connected with. You know, I loved music. I listened to it all the time, and playing it like gave me something, you know, to work on and pursue. And then creating it gave me something to work towards and pursue. It's not lost on me, like, the opportunity that I have. I know it's like hitting the lottery and winning the jackpot. It's like, you know, the amount of people that would love to be doing this versus the amount of people that actually are doing it, drastically different numbers, you know. So I just know that I was given an opportunity at a very young age. And then the people that get the opportunity, they're lucky if they have a five-year-long career.
Hear more reflection from Kenny Wayne Shepherd, the inspiration for his latest album, and the message from Stevie Ray Vaughan that's always on his mind. On Music Journeys, available as a podcast on the major platforms, the WCBE app, and our own little hub, The Podcast Experience, at WCBE.org.